everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. I got a returning guest on the line, and if you haven't noticed, the stock market has been down about 600 points. We've had some uncertainty go on with the G20 meetings. Trump and Xi haven't exactly come to terms here, and we're seeing some technical breakdowns in the stock market with the yield curves inverting, getting real close to it, and this situation where the algorithms are selling off the stocks. And, you know, I want to try to make some sense of this. And we have a great guest on the line, Harley Schlanger of LaRouchePack.com. He's been on the show before. He's a returning guest, and he's got a wealth of knowledge to share. So I'm very interested in getting his thoughts on what is going on right now. Harley, thanks for coming on the line with me today.
Sure. Thanks for inviting me.
Harley, so what do you make of the current situation? A few things kind of converging at once, multifaceted, nuanced situation that we have going on here. What are your thoughts on what we're seeing right now?
Well, you're right. There's a convergence of many things. But the most important thing is there's a breakdown in the system. And, you know, the most recent example of that is what's happening in France, where you have Macron, who on behalf of the so-called climate change policy imposed new taxes. But these are gas taxes imposed on people who can't afford gas. And so you have riots in the street. And this is not something that's provoked by professionals, although there are some professional operators who are trying to turn it into something else. But it's an anger in the population over the fact that their living standards have collapsed and they have no sense that the government cares. And they're not worried about carbon dioxide. They're not worried about fossil fuels burning up the planet. They're worried about putting dinner on the table and keeping a roof over their head. And so I think Macron supposedly tonight is going to give a concession speech and say he's going to postpone it for 6 months. That's not going to solve the problem. It's the system that's broken down. We see it in the U.S. with what's happening with General Motors, and now the rumors that Ford is going to have 25,000 layoffs. The problems with General Electric, with Sears. People say, oh, this is the old economy. The old economy is collapsing. It's nothing to do with the old economy. It has to do with crazy policies of financial derivatives, of securitization, of companies that should be able to invest in new plant and equipment, instead borrowing huge amounts of money to buy their own stocks. And then when those stocks start going down because of a bad economy, the ability to pay back the debt, especially as interest rates are climbing, becomes non-existent. So we're caught in a classic collapse scenario of a bubble. And the problem is that people who are making policy have no solutions. I think I heard that Jerome Powell is now saying no interest rate hikes next year. Well, he's a little late on that. The problem is that they've gone with quantitative easing for so long, they can't get out of it. They've changed the fundamental relationship and dynamic of the financial system in such a way that we're in unknown waters.
So talking about deep state and the people behind the scenes pulling the strings, where are we with that? Do you suppose Trump has any sort of grasp on the economy? He really took ownership with it going up and in its robust numbers that we saw in certain areas, you know, money coming back, the tax cuts, which were fundamentally positive. But now we're still in that situation, like you just said, you know, the Federal Reserve is kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they raise rates continuously, they perpetuate the problem. But if they stop raising rates, it's kind of tapping out to the problems that we're having. And I'm not sure if that's going to signal a positive neutralization of what's going on in the markets overall. So
It's like cold turkey to a heroin addict. You know, nothing good is going to come of it. You know, what we saw is after 2008, the decision was made to continue the speculative economy, to continue providing cheap credit or zero interest credit to speculators, to the shadow banking system, to the offshore markets. Why? because they didn't want to write down what was already known to be bad debt. You know, we're talking about debt that was junk bond debt in 2009, 2010, that was kept on the books at face value because of the quantitative easing funds, you know, somewhere between $13 trillion and some people say as much as $24 trillion. And what did that create? A giant corporate debt bubble. Now, we already know about the federal deficit, the $21 trillion or so, at least officially acknowledged. But there's a corporate debt bubble somewhere around $14 or $15 trillion. You have the private debt problem of Americans with credit cards, student debt, car debt, and so on. Housing debt, you know, the housing market is tumbling. So we're having a perfect storm of bad news. And President Trump did what he correctly attacked Obama for, which is claiming a stock market upvaluation as a sign of a recovery. Now, as you said, there were some good things that were started. I think his attack on the free trade agreements, his attack on the World Trade Organization at the just completed G20 summit, these are all good developments. But the problem is tariffs on China alone will not reverse the trade deficit. We have a trade deficit because of World Trade Organization policies that China took advantage of, that American corporations took advantage of, but harmed the American economy. You need to figure out a way to get credit into new physical production. And that's what LaRouche has always called for after the 2008 crash. We have a physical economy. We have to invest in that. If we don't invest in that, we are only pouring gasoline on the fire, and that's the new debt bubble. It's unsustainable. Mm. Now, there are things you can do to survive week to week. Private investors are in big trouble, I think. Pension funds are in trouble. You look at General Motors, they're getting rid of the idea of any kind of pension fund. I think we're seeing a downshift, a further downshift. Now, if what Trump says occurred in the meeting with Xi Jinping, that is holding off tariffs until there can be a broader new policy discussion, that's for the good, because the Chinese need the U.S. economy. They don't want to harm us. They're holding, you know, a couple $1 trillion of U.S. assets. They need us to succeed, and we need them until we figure out how to start producing things that we're buying from China. Mm. So it's a moment of great concern. And you did mention the deep state. Look, the decision was made even before Trump left the United States that he could not be allowed to meet with Putin. And it was not just the provocation by Poroshenko in Ukraine, which is a deep state operation, but it was the escalation of Mueller, supposedly coming up with all this evidence of Trump and Russia, which amounts to not even a hill of beans, unless you buy the line that it's a fact that Trump and Putin collaborated to steal the election. And I don't think that's been proven. So everything we're seeing on Russiagate is designed to prevent the US and Russia from having a normalized relationship, just as the discussion with China has been thrown off by some of the hardliners who are saying punish China and then we can get an agreement. I don't think that'll work.
So that's interesting. I feel like this is kind of what, in certain ways, I was expecting, because I don't believe, and maybe Trump actually believes tariffs are good, but I feel like he should know that they're probably not good. And, you know, he's addressing that there were imbalances between the different countries.
Yeah.
And the fact that he got this to the point where they're going to say, oh, we're going to delay this for 90 days and work on this, I feel like that was the goal from the beginning, to negotiate these things. And in my opinion, isn't that a good thing?
Well, who's going to work on it? That's the question. If it's Navarro, forget it. Navarro wrote this book, Death by China, and he's trying to kill China. Lighthizer's a little different. You know, the question of tariffs, there is a case that can be made for tariffs in certain circumstances. Especially when you try to revive certain industries, but not as a punishment, especially when you're punishing a country for doing something you gave them permission to do. And Trump has said this. You know, Trump says he doesn't blame China for this. It's our own fault. But now we're using tariffs to remedy it. You know, I think the point is that China to the U.S. today is not like Britain was to the United States in the 1790s, when Hamilton and other founding fathers argued for tariffs in order to protect the potential development of native industry. Mm. We've destroyed our industry. We've outsourced. We have a tax policy, a free trade policy, which convinced corporations, if they want to make money, leave the United States. And the American people are suffering because of that. And Trump is trying to do something about it. But a broad brush with tariffs is not the solution. What we recommend is that he's got to start looking at credit policy. And that means you have to take the power of credit away from the private banks that run the Federal Reserve System, the private banks that run the shadow banking system, that build up the leverage, the debt, and make profits on it. If you don't take that power away from them, they're going to continue to play that game to the point of a collapse. And so I think this is where Trump showed something that was quite interesting in the campaign, which he hasn't come back to, which is he called for reimposing Glass-Steagall banking regulations. So commercial banks cannot engage in speculation. Now, if you went back to a separated banking system and said to the investment bankers, you can speculate all you want, but you're not going to get bailed out. Hmm. You're not going to get away with having the taxpayer take on your bad debt. If we did that and then concentrated on generating credit to the commercial banks that they could give to their customers who are entrepreneurs, who are scientists, research and development teams, people looking at new technologies for production, then it would work. But that requires a shift in banking. And that's what did not happen in 2008 because of Obama and because of Timothy Geithner and because of people like Christopher Dodd and Barney Frank, who created a monstrosity called the Dodd-Frank bill, which allowed the swindlers to keep swindling while continuing to starve credit from the real economy.
Yeah, it's a situation where you have these privatized gains, but socialized losses, right?
Yeah.
You know, and and when you do that, it completely distorts the decisions of the speculation and the amount of risk that a company is going to take on if they have nothing to lose. They don't have to make rational decisions. The rational decision is, I have nothing to lose, right? And of course, back in the expense of the common person, which seems to be the trend here. You brought up France and a gas tax that disproportionately affects the poor than it does the rich.
Well, and you know, you hear these multi-billionaires talking about moral hazard when it comes to small investors, but for them, there's no moral hazard. They know that if they get in trouble, they'll get bailed out. It happened in 2008. Now, the question comes up, what if Trump continues to break with the policies of Bush and Obama, continues to try to get an agreement with Putin, an agreement with Xi Jinping, with the Indian government, breaking out of the transatlantic stranglehold? Would they pull the plug on the stock market to bring him down? And I think if that happened, then you might be able to convince enough Republicans in the Senate to convict Trump if he were impeached in the House. And I think that may be the fallback option of the deep state, because, you know, if Mueller has to present what he's got in court, even in Alexandria, Virginia, you know, the home court advantage, it's going to be hard to get convictions because there's no evidence of Russian hacking. And that's why they're trying so hard to break Roger Stone and using Jerome Corsi and others to do it. So we're at a point where the average American has to look at what's happening in France and get inspired by it and say, look, the people don't have to eat the losses of these super wealthy. In fact, we don't have to buy the BS that the economy is strong when we're still not able to make it. And I think this is where you need a fight in the Congress and a fight to show Trump that if he has the guts to really take on Wall Street, you'll have the support of the American people.
So, Harley, I'd like to just get your thoughts on Trump's true support at the moment. And maybe it's just because we're seeing a lot of volatility in the economy that, you know, is making it feel like there's a lack of control maybe in the White House, and maybe that there's more discontent from the populace about the, you know, the opinion on Trump. And I know it was a little flustering, you know, in terms of optics when you watch him after the midterms and, you know, what happened in that news report conference. And it just seems like the optics of the situation might be a little out of control from my perspective. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts? Do you think there's a good chance Trump even makes it past 2020 and gets reelected?
That's a big question. But look at what happened in what he concentrated on in the midterms. He concentrated on the Senate. The House was a lost cause. I mean, there were almost 35 to 38 Republicans who were incumbents who didn't run for re-election. And a lot of the people who were recruited to replace them were not loyal to Trump. There were a lot of Republican congressmen that were not part of the Trump crowd, and many of them lost. So losing the House was something that was a foregone conclusion. He drew the line on the Senate and knew he had to win some races. And I think the important things to look at are what happened in Florida, where a Republican won a Democratic seat, in Missouri, where a Republican won a Democratic seat, and Indiana, where the Republicans won a Democratic seat. And the loss in Nevada, I mean, Dean Heller was not a Trump loyalist anyway. Meanwhile, you talk about addition by subtraction. Jeff Flake is gone, Corker's gone. Some of the Republicans who were lukewarm toward Trump are now out. So I think what he showed is that the base is still there, provided they're given leadership. And that's why I think Trump has to start sounding more like he did the last weeks of the campaign, when he brought up Glass-Steagall, when he took on what he called the War Party. He made the point, the case, that Hillary Clinton was preparing the U.S. for a war with Russia, with her provocations on Syria. Now, because of the problems with the CIA, you know, disputes in the military and so on, Trump has not been able to get us out of Syria, out of Afghanistan. He's got a move to do that. And to do that, he has to meet with Putin, because Putin holds the cards there in the Middle East. So what's the strategy, the anti-Trump strategy? To not let him meet with Putin. To, in fact, say that any agreement with Putin is a capitulation based on the lie that Putin rigged the election for Trump. So I think it's one of these traps that he could break out of, but he's going to have to do it in a public way. And I will say this, Kenneth, because, you know, like, I've been watching Trump very closely for 3 years now. And, you know, I think some of what he does is silly and childish and self-defeating. On the other hand, I've never seen a president who stood up to the combined forces of the Justice Department, the CIA, and the FBI, and took them on. They're powerful institutions, and they've been doing everything they can to run a coup against him, and taking on the media, the Washington Post, the New York Times. But I wish he would be more clear in what he intends to do. And that's the issue, and that's why I continue to do what I'm doing to try and present a clear alternative to what we're otherwise seeing as chaos.
Well, I'll leave it right there then. Harley, thanks for coming on the show. If people want to learn more about what you're doing and the content that you put out and ways that they can partner with you, please let them know where they can go and what they can expect to find. And please share some closing thoughts on the discussion that we've been having.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, because these are compelling moments in history where there's going to be decisions in the weeks and months ahead that will shape the next 20 to 30 years. The Chinese are thinking in terms of two generations ahead. We're thinking in terms of the next quarter or the next week. So we've got to change our thinking in the United States, and that's what we've been trying to do with LaRouche Pack. I have a blog. If people want to get access to it, want to get a link, they can write to me at my personal email address, which is harleysch@gmail.com. And I'll send you my latest articles. You mentioned one. I just wrote one on the fact that a crash is inevitable unless there's a shift, a fundamental shift in policy. And I also wrote something on the whole Mueller update. So harleysch@gmail.com. And look, my final point is people should still be optimistic. What we're seeing is that the population of the world is not submitting to the corporatist fascist policies of the bankers. There's a desire for justice, for honesty. And the problem is most people don't know enough about it. So you've got to study these things, think about them. I know the work that you're doing to try and educate people is important, and I'm happy that we could have this conversation.
Well, I appreciate you coming on Crush the Street.